Thank you. It's good to be with you. I too have no relationships to disclose, except I will disclose that a year ago I was picking olives in West Bank. So. And they're good. I would like to cover four areas, and I see this presentation as sort of a small specific of the two presentations that we have already had. And so I'll skip over a number of slides that I think are repeating. I would like to take this topic, compare Israeli and Palestinian water consumption access, contrast the international laws, and I'll go more specifically to their laws because I think our previous speaker covered international laws quite well. And then specifically the health challenges related to water and access and availability, and then some potential responses. So consumption and access. Just some background a bit. The water sources for the occupied Palestinian territory are the Jordan River system, the West Bank aquifer, the coastal aquifer as groundwater sources. And then there's desalination plants, surface runoff and capture, well plants or boreholes, as was mentioned earlier, and water treatment. And as Doris mentioned, many of those sources are utilized beyond their potential. On this, I don't have a little red light here, but if you see the red curlicue line there, that is the wall that's being constructed into the West Bank by Israel. Therefore, many of the water sources are cut off, are being folks where they live are cut off not only from their fields but also from their water sources. The green line is what was set up in 64 and is what is supposed to be the West Bank. The groundwater divide is the blue. Quite a number of things affect consumption and access. One is fuel shortage, import restrictions. You can't get any, in Gaza particularly, you can't get anything to repair your wells or your sewage treatment facilities. It's assumed that 66% of Palestinians are not connected to a sewage network. And much of the wastewater is discharged into the environment without treatment, and you can imagine what that does over time. No water, essentially, from the Jordan River, which is now also very, very tiny, is used by Palestinians because they're restricted access right up to the edge of the Jordan, even though it's in the West Bank. And as you can see, the comparison of usage, Israel uses almost four times per capita as West Bank. This is a diagram that sort of demonstrates what happens from the aquifers. In front of the wall is West Bank. West Bank's aquifer is where the pipe comes out of. This goes back to the assumptions about whose water it is. It's controlled by Israel, which is on the other side of the wall and is verdant, and they have plenty of water. And a little bit comes back in to water a small plant on the Palestinian side of the wall. This is one person's depiction of where water is and who gets to use it there. Whoops. I think I'll go on from that. Israel has solutions for Palestinian water difficulties that would not necessarily go to the groundwater. One is that they should be working better with wastewater reuse, with desalinization plants from the Mediterranean, and to import water, particularly from Jordan, as opposed to increase access to groundwater. There's also the difficulty of direct contamination, and these are two examples of settlers' attacks on water. The settlements are larger Israeli towns, cities in the West Bank. They don't have quite the same approach to Palestinians as the settlers or small outposts that are trying to develop into towns. And this comes from a recent report from Amnesty International. These were incidents between 2005 and 2007, where Israeli outpost settlers entered through a substance into the rainwater, and it turned out to increase the or change the pH, so it became highly acidic. Another example was soiled diapers and dead chickens into their water reservoirs, and the samples showed that it was actually a banned substance in Israel. There also is damage to the infrastructure. The home I stayed in West Bank, as all homes have water catchment, large containers on the roof of their house, and they're often shot at by Israeli soldiers. As noted here, they're good for target practice. I'm going to skip over the laws because I think you covered those quite well in the previous previous presentation. I'm going to compare a bit Israeli law and Palestinian law, and you'll notice that the principles are about the same. Israeli law from 59 gives no recognition of shared surface or groundwater sources. All sources of water in Israel are public property, but the implication is to Israelis. And each person is entitled to use that as long as it doesn't hurt it for others. And the Ministry of Agriculture is authorized to regulate water. Very similarly, in Palestine, or in West Bank, all water sources available are considered public property. The problem is, whose water is it? And the Palestinian Authority water law essentially does the same thing as Israeli water law, but there has never been an agreement on who controls that, Israel or Palestine. In the Oslo Agreement in 95, the Oslo Accord said that Israel recognizes Palestinian water rights in the West Bank. These will be settled in the permanent status agreement relating to various water resources. However, that has never happened since 95. Some of the health effects. First of all, people need to cope with the lack of water, and we've heard about some of these already: buying unsafe water, washing less regularly, washing clothes as infrequently as possible. One woman said she covered all her floors with carpet, and then so it wouldn't be as dirty, and then didn't wash anything for 3 years because she had no water. Well, just because it's doesn't mean it's clean, but at least you can't see it and it's absorbing somewhere. There's fewer persons are growing gardens because they don't have the access to water, fewer animals, and people are doing more unlicensed wells. Financial implications we've heard about, particularly the tanker deliveries, and the access restrictions for tanker deliveries have to do with having to drive around. If you remember those red lines, people can't drive now within just a few kilometers of their village. They have to go all the way around to be able to get back to it because of the wall, or simply because of Israeli checkpoints. Some categories of health effects well known to us in public health: direct and indirect, and the direct ones by ingestion, and indirect mental health. You can imagine, as a mother trying to keep your children clean, trying to manage all these things and not being able to afford the water or have enough. Waterborne diseases have been higher in Israel, West Bank, the West Bank, and also Gaza: shigellosis, E. coli, hepatitis A. Skin diseases are higher, fungus diseases, and direct infections. Particularly in January of this year, with Israel's cast lead operation, a couple of things that happened in Gaza. One wastewater plant had a direct hit, and 100,000 metric tons of sewage was spread into the community and agriculture land. Asbestos and other hazardous waste delivered into the groundwater because of destruction of buildings, as well as from many dead animals and chickens. The Union of Palestinian Medical Relief Committees have published some items saying that 3/4 of all their clinic patients suffer from infectious diseases, 74% of all childhood deaths from infectious disease, and a large percent have roundworms. Those are worse in refugee camps. Some other interesting things that I hadn't known before is physicians believe, but we don't have studies to support this, that their salty water is responsible for the high incidence of kidney and liver complaints because of the desalinization is not working so well. Increasing nitrate contamination of Gaza's drinking water at this point, not a single safe well is considered to exist there in terms of the level of nitrate. Increasing levels of fluoride also are there, and the effects of groundwater chemical pollution from all fertilizers, pesticides, etc. One additional problem that is being studied, but we don't have a whole lot of information on prevalence yet, is the methemoglobinemia, or blue babies. It is a blood disorder that is characterized by, well, it's a form of hemoglobin that doesn't bind oxygen, and it's caused by ingestion of nitrates. It's colorless, tasteless, odorless, so you don't know that you're getting it. Blood samples are very interesting. They appear chocolate brown. If you expose them to air, they don't turn pink. The infants appear normal, but then show signs of blueness around the mouth, and at some point develop a peculiar lavender color. And it can move on to convulsions and death. But again, as I said, we don't know the prevalence of this situation. A few ideas about responses. All sources agree that the long-term responses are political ones. We have knowledge in terms of knowing what to do about these things, but until people on both sides are able to work things out, until people are able to accompany both sides, I don't think we'll get to a solution, a broad solution. At the same time, to avert disasters, ecological disasters as well as human disasters, I think short-term solutions are appropriate, but it seems like we always need to keep in mind working on short-term solutions while at the same time working on long-term solutions, or working at short-term solutions in a way that make the long-term solutions possible. One of the things I found fascinating as I've been thinking about this is that everybody has an answer for what the Israelis should do and what the Palestinians should do. I don't think any of us in this room live there, and it's a little strange to be saying what they should do. But when you're involved in this, everybody has their idea. So there are quite a number of people that say, well, the Palestinian Authority needs to do what they can, maximizing the resources, taking the measures that they can to clean the water supply, to protect the water supply, particularly against taking measures to regulate the vendors. Others then say, or some people are speaking to both, they say, well, if we'd stop the construction of the walls inside the occupied territories, restore seized property, permit the Palestinians to extract an equitable share — it's certainly not equitable at this point — and a few other things like that. But then many people say, the donors have their responsibility as well. And these would be NGOs within the countries, this would be international non-governments, as well as governmental authorities. And a couple of things that are highly suggested is that the fourth one down, that donors should commit to long-term projects and kind of stay with it. Just two examples of ways of responding. One is CARE International, which is an NGO that works in West Bank. And what they're trying to do is simply work at the neighborhood level, construction of household water, catchment kinds of structures, rehab the water networks that have been neglected for quite a while. And they're assuming that they can provide help for 20,000 persons in the West Bank and 16,000 in Gaza. Their primary donor is the European Commission. One that's smaller, but I think that makes more sense because it's working. It's a small NGO called EcoPeace, Friends of the Earth Middle East, and they work with neighborhood on both sides. So you have families that wouldn't necessarily talk to each other, but they're trying to look at this as a shared problem, that this is not just one problem or another. And basically, they partner communities on each side of a border or the political divide. They sometimes take them on trips together to see where people have had shared water. They work in their own communities, and then they learn from the other community, and they do quite a few joint youth exchanges. After 8 years, the local streams are cleaner in those areas. They also have an increased understanding of the other, which I think probably is the key to this kind of thing. Many shared projects, and there is more groundwater retained. Again, it's a very small project, but it's the kind of thing that I think will contribute both at the short and long term. this is a complex, multifaceted situation, and there is no easy answer, but it seems like we have to do something. Thank you.